Beyond the Iron Gate from the Reunion Hill CD in 1997, that was 5 years after the release of Richard Schindel's first album, Sparrow's Point, in 1992. And Richard, your musical career had a kind of stop-start nature. After growing up in New Jersey in New York and going to college, you spent time at a Buddhist monastery, lived for a while in Paris busking on the streets, and then studied to become a priest psychologist before music drew you back. That kind of is a very fascinating formative beginning to your career, isn't it?
I did all those things mainly because it never occurred to me that I could make a living playing music.
And how powerful was the draw that music had for you?
Well, it was ultimately irresistible. I had always wanted to play music. I had, from a very early age, I had wanted to play the guitar. I never had any ambition to be a songwriter, although I always was fascinated by songs and how people put them together and made them sound so simple when they were really so complicated. So I always wanted to be a musician from a very early age, although doing it as a career is another thing entirely. And I didn't write a song until I was a song that anybody else would want to hear or that I would want them to hear until I was about 26 or 27. Prior to that, I was just a guitar player. And I wasn't good enough a guitar player to say be a session musician or a studio musician or anything like that. I have the accidental career. I never had the ambition to be a professional musician.
And what were early influences in music?
The very earliest were Bob Dylan and the Beatles, basically. I wanted to play guitar mainly because I loved the way Bob Dylan's guitar sounded on the Freewheelin' Dylan. He got a great guitar sound, and I was fascinated with that. And the quest for that particular tone is one that continues until this day. And I was just fascinated by that record from the age of about 6 or 7 and wanted to play the guitar. But then I sort of went off into the Beatles for a while. And then I went off into bluegrass and various kinds of what we call progressive rock and blues. Then, later in the 80s, I got into Irish music. So my influences are kind of all over the place.
Now, talking about songwriting, Richard, it seems that your songs are painstakingly crafted, kind of honed to perfection. Some storytellers have told me that in developing a story for performance, they often live with that story for months and months and months as the piece forms. And is that a kind of similar process for you when you're writing songs?
It can be. It depends on the song. Some songs happen very quickly, just present themselves whole and are written very quickly, perhaps in less than a day. Those don't tend to be very complicated narratives, story songs. Other kinds of songs I've lived with for as much as a few years.
Your stories are often full of characters, interesting characters. How do those characters reveal themselves to you?
Oh, I wish I knew. Perhaps then I could control it more and have more fluid writing process. It seems to be completely random and unpredictable how these stories present themselves. It's got to be something very specific. It's got to be, songs are basically small things. You need an angle, or at least I need a very clear angle onto something. An angle so precise that it almost feels inevitable when you're writing it. And sometimes I find that angle by choosing to look at the world through the eyes of someone else.
There's a couple of characters on your latest album, Not Far Now, Balloon Man and the Juggler Out in Traffic. Tell us a little bit about those people.
Well, those are both real people in Buenos Aires, where I live. Balloon Man is a fellow who sells balloons to children. There's a circuit he's on, walking from park to park, playground to playground, usually on the weekends. He's got this great cross-like structure that he carries through the streets, and it's got balloons hanging off of it and beach balls as well. He has to walk past our apartment on his way from one to the other. So he's somebody I see every once in a while, and he's been walking past our place and heading to the plaza up the road for years, and he's kind of a colorful character, and the song happened just the way I describe it. I was standing out on the balcony looking down at the street, and there he was making his way up the street. And in the case of the juggler, there are many, many jugglers all over Buenos Aires juggling all kinds of things. He was just this guy who stands on a corner, one of the major corners in downtown Buenos Aires, that I have to pass by every once in a while, and there he was with the hat in hand coming by the windows, and some people open them and some people don't. And I just thought that was an interesting dynamic. And it was another one that wrote itself relatively quickly.
I'm talking to singer-songwriter Richard Schindel. And Richard, you moved to Buenos Aires in Argentina with your wife 10 years ago. And the studio album that followed that move was Vuelta in 2004, which means turning around or returning home, doesn't it? But you were quite happy in South America, weren't you?
Yes, we still are. Vuelta means, it means many things. It's a complex word. If you say hemos vuelto, it means we've come back. But una vuelta as a noun is a revolution or a turn. It could be a turn in the sense of coming back, or it could be a turn away from something. So there's a lot of ambiguity in the word. I wanted to use a Spanish word, but it had to be something that was pronounceable by English speakers. And vuelta seems, you know, relatively simple. However, I seem to have been wrong. I've had people come up to me and ask me about my record called Velveeta, or all kinds of horrible things. The title of the record was a reference to the fact that my wife had come home, perhaps, to her world, that I was taking a turn in another direction on that particular record.
There's a beautiful track on that album called There Goes Mavis, and it seems there's some vivid imagery in that song.
That song was one that was about to be abandoned. It's a song that takes place at a beach in Massachusetts. And I was writing a song about a bunch of guys that are building a sandcastle, perhaps some uncles and fathers and sons building a sandcastle. In the middle of this, there is this visitation of an orange canary. That canary rescued the song. I didn't think the sandcastle thing was going anywhere. And then my daughter's orange canary just floated into the song. And I just thought, well, what would happen if I made her part of the song? And you throw an element like that into the song, into something which is relatively monochromatic, like a bunch of people building a sandcastle at a beach on a gray day, perhaps. And you throw an orange canary into it, and all kinds of things happen. And Mavis the canary completely transformed the song.
Now, being in Buenos Aires, and you do also tour quite regularly in America, but I guess you miss working with other musicians face-to-face. How do you collaborate at distance with other musicians?
These days, with digital technology and the Internet, you can pretty much record anything, anywhere, anytime, and put it into a mix and make it sound as if you were recording it together. It's really quite amazing. There's no way I could live in Argentina were it not for the Internet and massive bandwidth. I will record something in my dining room in Buenos Aires or at a studio. I'll send that to a friend in New York, and he'll take it to a studio, and they'll add a bass or a fiddle or electric guitar. In some cases, I've just sent a stereo mix directly to the musician, and he just turns on the tape machine, adds it, and sends it back to me via email, and then you can incorporate everything into the record. So this has made it possible for me to continue working with people I've worked with for years. And then I come back and we go to a studio and work together on the final mix and make it sound like one thing as opposed to many.
Now, I once went to a Suzanne Vega concert in London and walked in whilst the support act was on, and mistakenly I thought it was you on stage. Well, actually, it turned out to be the Welsh singer-songwriter Martin Joseph. But the thing that strikes me about both of you is that you're true musical troubadours. Because here you are, living in Argentina, having your life there, staying connected with the United States, and playing in a small venue, the Twickenham Folk Club, locally to us tonight. That's quite a lifestyle, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it's a lifestyle. It's extremely complex. And, you know, and sometimes it's difficult, but I absolutely love what I do. I consider myself the luckiest person on the planet. I have a family which is intact that I adore. We have a nice life in Buenos Aires. And I get to make a living by getting up and singing songs, which is completely astonishing nowadays. And I get to travel and play in places like Twickenham. I played the Twickenham Club before and absolutely loved it. And the audience was just great. I went back to Buenos Aires, I told my wife. I said it was just so wonderful in England in general, and I mentioned specifically Twickenham, that the audience just was so so enthusiastic, so on top of everything. They were completely on their toes. I could hear when they picked up on a certain lyric or a double entendre or something, and I could hear that they were paying very, very close attention, and that's something that is that really helps me when I'm playing. It's always a pleasure when you feel like an audience is getting it. So I'm really happy to be going back there.
Now, it's probably fair to say that your most critically acclaimed album is Somewhere Near Paterson from 10 years ago in 2000. Four of my favourite tracks on that album are The Grocer's Broom, the story of an old shopkeeper going out of business to increasing rents, Wisteria, a song full of nostalgic beauty, You Stay Here, all about a family trying to survive a war-torn landscape, and Abuelita, which is the Spanish word for grandmother and tells the story of a woman's search for her disappeared granddaughter. Now, I'd like to play all those tracks, but which would you choose as having the most interesting story?
Oh, Lord. Let's see. Wisteria, You Stay Here, Abuelita. What was the other one?
The Grocer's Broom.
The Grocer's Broom. I guess Abuelita, that is a true story. It's a horrible, horrible story. It has to do with the disappeared in Argentina in the late 1970s and 1980s, los desaparecidos, as they're called, where the dictatorship abducted people and they disappeared. They were killed. Some of these people were women, and some of them were pregnant, and the children were born, and then their identities were erased, and the children were given to other families illegally, and they've grown up not knowing who they are, and little by little they're being found, or they're questioning their own identities, and I think they've managed to reunite over 100 now of these children who are no longer children, they're in their mid-20s, with their families, with their grandparents in general. It's a very difficult, painstaking process, but this song is from the point of view of one grandmother who's still looking for her grandchild, and there are many such cases in Argentina, so this could be any one of hundreds of people.